Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very busy week in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. And we'll start with the governor's chief of staff talking about why the Evers administration will seek $600 million more for special education. And co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, John Nygren, says we still have a problem how to pay for that middle-class tax cut. And there's a bipartisan deal that would expunge some criminal records, nonviolent, non-drug charges, so people could have a better chance of getting a job and reclaiming their careers. And an exchange on Tuesday between Senator Tim Carpenter, a member of the WEDIC board, and WEDIC CEO Mark Hogan. Wish I was there.
We're going to do a $600 million investment in special education, which has not seen an increase in over 10 years. When we were on the campaign, right after we won the primary, the governor and I, we were in, I think it was Wauwatosa, and I mean, it was Waukesha, and there was a teacher that came up to us. She was an aide in a special ed school, and she started crying, and she started telling us that at her school, as an aide, she, with the resources that they have, she can only spend 15 minutes a day with her kids, with the special ed kids that she's serving. And she said 15 minutes a day. She's like, I cannot provide the services. And this is in one of the most, you know, sort of, you know, obviously a school district that is financially stable and has the resources. But she was like, I'm spending 15 minutes a day. That's not acceptable.
Are you expecting a lot of gridlock when it comes to passing this budget? No. Are we expecting months and months?
Well, I mean, it's a little too early. The ball's really in Governor Evers' court. As far as, you know, where we go from here, the Assembly did put out a memo saying here's a number of things we could work on, one of them being a tax cut that he actually championed during the election. Now, the biggest issue that he has with our tax cut is that he actually wants to, rather than using existing surplus additional revenues in the future to pay for it, he wants to raise taxes on farmers and manufacturers. The reason I've been against that is because we're in a great place financially in our state. Our economy is growing. Why would we want to jeopardize that and raise taxes on the people who actually are creating those jobs?
We're talking about people who had misdemeanors or H and I felonies. We're not talking about sex offenders. We're not talking about sex offenses. We're not talking about drunken driving. We're talking about misdemeanors and H and I felonies. That's really important. And we want to make sure that these individuals who've had these offenses can go out and have a second chance. In Wisconsin, what happens if one has a court trial, one has to have, as a condition of that sentence, has to ask for that ability to have expungement. And how does one know, even know about it, first of all? How does one feel that they're prepared to ask for that? And thirdly, it's important to our citizens to have a second chance to come back.
There is a question of, as you stated, that Foxconn will not make its job requirements and it won't be receiving any taxpayer funds for that. WDC's contract does not require Foxconn to repay any program tax credits if it does not maintain all the jobs created during the 5 years of the contract. Why is Foxconn being treated differently?
I don't know that they are being treated any differently.
Yeah.
The fact is that we haven't paid any credits. If we pay out on credits, they don't maintain those jobs. We have the ability to claw back those credits that we paid out. The contract with Foxconn, even though it's, I've been criticized for it only being 29 pages long, has proven to be effective.
For the last 3 days, Capitol reporters like you and the whole press corps has been and the business community has been chasing the Foxconn story. Now, we held off taping the show for today's announcement, and I just want to read the statement from one of the news stories, yours or the Journal Sentinel. The decision to build an LCD manufacturing plant on its Mount Pleasant campus, quote, came after a productive discussion between the White House and the company Foxconn, and after a personal conversation between President Donald J. Trump and Chairman Terry Gao. But now on Wednesday, Mr. Wu, Foxconn's number two, said, we're not building a factory in Wisconsin. You can't use a factory to view our Wisconsin investment. And on Thursday, an Asian news organization reported that the Mount Pleasant campus construction was going to be suspended. Now we have today's announcements. Okay, your turn. Sort us through it.
So, one, Foxconn has scaled back this project kind of every so often, incrementally, since the first announcement. Yes, today's announcement, they're going to do LCD screens. They're Generation 6, okay? They're kind of everything from smaller screens, I think 80 to 90 inches. Generation 10.5 was the original promise. These were like these massive, giant screens.
I went to a WMC forum at which Mr. Wu said these giant screens are going to be the size of two king beds. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed. So that was the first iteration here.
Now we're talking about with Foxconn doing a combination of a manufacturing facility, a packaging plant, a research and development hub. I mean, in today's statement, talked about a technology hub as well. The project is changing what it's going to be. Now, here's the thing. Part of this is just really global forces. This is not a company that is basing decisions on tax policy in Wisconsin. Yes, you know, beyond the package we are giving them to kind of come here.
Yeah.
There are much bigger forces at play, which is what's the market want right now? And that's what I think, in talking to people this week about, maybe just lost a little bit, is the reality of what a company like this goes through. It's a global company serving a global market. What it has to do, which is meet the demands of what's out there in the market. Now, what's been interesting is the reaction from kind of Republicans and Democrats. Democrats have seen this, look, this is another example of a failed promise. Remember, when we first talked about this project with Foxconn, there were stories about places like India, Brazil,
Pennsylvania,
that they had promised things and didn't come through. Republicans, in some fashion, try to blame Tony Evers for the original discussion of maybe they weren't going to build a manufacturing plant at all.
Boston Fitzgerald, the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, said he has an anti-jobs agenda.
But now we're back to manufacturing plant being part of this facility, so I'm not sure where they're at right now. But in talking to people this week, the question they've had is, what will this be in the end? And the honest answer is, I don't think we know. I don't think we will know for maybe 20 years. And that harkens back to the first look we had at the deal from LFB's, or Legislative Fiscal Bureau, saying it could be 25 years, 23, 20, 25.
Before you see
a return on the investment.
Right.
This may be the case now where it could be a while before we actually break even, not just break even, but before we see what's it really going to be. And now the flip side is Republicans have tried, and in talking to folks, I don't think they've been successful so far making the case of they only get credits if jobs are created and things are built. Yes, that is true. Like, that's part of the contract. But that message, I guess what I'm talking about, the political piece of this, that message has not resonated as much as $4 billion for a Taiwanese company, and now it's not producing what they say it's going to. Going forward, and that's another thing too, is Democrats are saying, well, yeah, it's true. You have to create the jobs, get the tax credits, but we've already done. We're doing the expansion of 94 North-South. We're going to have ratepayers cover the cost of a high-voltage line to the facility. That's going to be an expense.
Diverting millions of gallons of water from Lake Michigan.
There are all kinds of things like that.
You have air emission issues.
So
now this factory is back on. Because you and I saw a press release from a conservation group saying, well, then you no longer have to divert, 6 million gallons of water?
7 million.
7 million a day.
What I don't know is the timeline. That wasn't a statement this morning. We're hoping to get that. When this is actually going to happen. They've been talking about, as these stories have popped up about what's going to happen, they talk about the next 18 months and like these various things that they want to do. What's the timeline to actually have LCD panels roll up the assembly line? I don't know. And then two, how many jobs is it going to entail? Now, they talked about, you know, up to 13,000 jobs, up to a $10 billion investment. To maximize on the credits. Well, what are we talking about now with this? I don't know. And somebody had a point to me this week that, look, even if it comes to be 4,000 jobs, all right, it's still 4,000 jobs that could be good-paying jobs in Racine County. So that's not a bad thing. But the issue is falling short of what was promised. And again, we won't know that for years, maybe.
Well, it was interesting. After the Wednesday story, the statement by Mr. Wu to the Reuters news organizations, which you and I trust, then it looked like Wisconsin was going to be an R&D center.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation centers in Eau Claire and Green Bay, and a $200 million R&D deal with UW-Madison. And Mayor Barrett said, well, that doesn't mean some residents of Milwaukee could be trained for manufacturing jobs. So we're losing manufacturing jobs. Then you had the report out of Asia, which said two things. Foxconn had suspended construction, and it was also not going to pursue that major development. So then you and I don't know what to believe. But then in the wake of that Asian news organization story, Mr. Hogan said, there never have been any side deals, and the contract stands on its own. There have been no attempts by either the company or the Evers or Walker administrations to renegotiate Weedick's contract, because the Asian news organization referred to suspending the Racine County construction because of attempts by the Evers administration to renegotiate. Hogan said no, and let's just put State Senator Dan Fion said, look, put this in perspective. When the legislature in Weedick crafted the Foxconn incentive package, it was carefully constructed to ensure that Wisconsin taxpayers would be protected if Foxconn plans did not come to fruition. Goes back to what you just said. They only get paid if they hire and develop.
Yes, that's of the $3 billion package from the state, $2.85 billion is split between job tax credits and capital tax credits. The rest was a sales tax exemption.
Sales tax exemption.
It's also a local package. There is a TIF district, which they expect the money that locals raise would cover these costs or other kind of protections. But the political message, my impression of talking to folks, is that political message of whether this is a winner for taxpayers is not resonating with people. That they're looking at this with some skepticism. And so there is going to be some work for Republicans if they want to make this view more positively. They're kind of keep hammering away at that and see if they can convince people of
and in point. The wake of a story every news cycle on Foxconn, the Journal Sentinel reported that while Mr. Hogan said, we haven't paid them anything in credits, but the Journal Sentinel reported local governments have spent about $190 million on improvements for Foxconn, but the company has repaid $60 million of that. So this just plays out on so many different levels. But, JR, can you and I sit here that this is a definitive statement? That they will build the manufacturing plant?
Everything that I see in life, I want to see something roll off the assembly line. I want to see actual proof. So, I mean, yeah, this is what the company's saying now. But
now, on February 1.
What's it going to look like? When's it going to happen? When will there actually be people in that facility? I mean, it's a sprawling facility. I've seen the pictures from the air of, like, you know, this giant facility. I know exactly where it is.
200 million square feet?
Yeah. So whatever it is, when do people start, like, parking in the parking lot every day and going in there to work and start producing something? That's, you know, that'll be proof.
Okay, and certainly this will keep resonating next week, won't it?
More than next week, probably.
Next, okay, yeah, all right, okay, new topic. Fiscal Bureau came out with the numbers that they do every 2 years, and it really sets the parameters on how much the governor and legislators can spend for the next 2 years. And the good news is that we're going to have $1.8 billion in additional revenues. I think you're talking about $17 million a year in GPR, 17 times 2, $36 million in GPR.
So you have to look at this kind of a big picture perspective, because what Fiscal Bureau said was we're going to have are projected to have about $200 million less in tax collections between now and the middle of 2021 than we expected. However, a big chunk of that is in this current fiscal year, like this budget, 2018 to 19, ends June 30th. That is $140 million of the reduced revenue. That is offset by appropriations coming less than they expected. They call them departmental revenues coming higher than expected. So it's actually your $69 million to the good, like more this year for your ending balance. So you end up just shy of $700 million gross balance in this fiscal year with $1.7 billion-ish. You know, so we're kind of rounding numbers. But the end result is we're going to have $2.4 billion more to spend in this next budget than we had in this budget. Spend or cut taxes or do whatever. That's a whole lot of money that we have not seen in a budget in a long time.
But Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald says the budget request from the agency still outstrips the revenue by now more than $1 billion. But then co-chairs of the Finance Committee, Senator Darling and Representative Nygren, Wisconsin is on a roll. Careful budgeting has put us in a position to continue to fund our priorities like public education, corrections reform, health care, and workforce development while still being accountable to taxpayers. But the governor's spokesman, Melissa Baldoff, said the GOP budget that we've inherited didn't fund K-12 schools. Mm-hmm. didn't reform the criminal justice system and help, because it's her term, help millionaires instead of working Wisconsin families. The Governor Evers understands these challenges.
I've been asking people about that statement, and the reaction I've gotten is that they believe Governor Evers is queuing up a budget that spends all that $2.4 billion and maybe even more. A couple things to keep in mind, Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. I asked Fiscal Bureau today, if it's implemented in January of 2020, it's around $280 million, so I'm rounding a little bit, for the next in the next budget.
Is that the biennial good news in the next two-year budget?
If.
280?
If we do it. Republicans don't want to do the expansion.
Right.
Here's the big question. If you save, I can put in quotes, $280 million general purpose revenue, what do you do with it? Do you plow it back in? We call them reimbursement rates for providers. So if you service, if you're Hospital Steve Walters, and you serve Medicaid patients, you get reimbursed by the state for those costs. However,
But Representative Nygren said only at 60% of my actual cost. Go ahead, excuse me.
So because of that lower reimbursement rate, people who have private insurance help subsidize the cost of that care.
Cost shifting.
There's all kinds of like interrelated things with healthcare in this country. So if you increase reimbursement rates, that might change the perspective of some people about how they view the expansion. However, if you take that money out that you were spending on Medicaid before and put it elsewhere, that's a different dynamic to debate. So there's that question going forward. Then there's this tax cut. Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, has been pushing for this separate bill to do a middle-class income tax cut using calls a surplus.
Which Nygren scores at $340 million. Go ahead, excuse me.
So use it that. Now, that dynamic, I've asked people, what do you do there? Well, if they pass that bill and put it on Evers' desk, they could try and force his hand and make Evers the bad guy for vetoing a middle-class income tax cut. That's part of his priorities. The flip side is, Evers can make a good argument of, if you're going to do anything that spends money right now or reduces revenues, it should be in the budget. The budget is right there. Why not put it in? So how's that going to play out? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on with this budget that we got to watch, but it's fascinating to see how they play this stuff out. And don't forget, Evers wants $600 million more for special education.
Yeah, and I asked Fiscal Bureau about that, and that is an upper of $530 in the second year of the biennium, which means if he got it by July 1 of 2021, we'd be paying $900 million just for special ed. But that has not been increased in 10 years, yep. As Maggie Gow said.
He wants to go back to two-thirds funding for public education,
yeah.
Which depending on, there are different methods to increase that state's share. Depending on how you do it, it could be $140 million in the next budget. I mean, I'm using very round numbers here.
Right.
But the point is, there are lots of things that Evers wants to do. He's got money to spend. Where does he put it? Don't forget of that, you know, the deficit we have where agency requests outstrip state revenues, a couple hundred million are tax cuts that Governor Walker wanted to do. Well, he's not governor anymore, so those go away. There are lots of things like that that it's not that hard. Diminish the task ahead. And when you're talking about a $1 billion debt, it's not that hard to figure a way to make it go away,
yeah.
Because you got this kind of revenue.
Absolutely. I'm always surprised in this business, and I was surprised by Governor Evers saying, let's delay the closing of Lincoln Hills and Copper, Copper Lake, thank you, by up to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, what they passed in the current law must close by January of 2021.
Yep.
The governor and his advisors are saying, that's not really going to work. And they're backed by Democratic Representative Evan Goyke, who's taken a lead on this, who says juvenile prisons will still close, but we need new timelines that reflect the very real concerns and limitations about how quickly to build new regional county-run facilities. And Senator Van Wongard, 30-year Racine police officer, chair of the key Senate committee, says, I would agree to a extension, maybe 6-9 months, but not 2 years.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, we still don't know, is the federal investigation of Lincoln Hills still going, ongoing? What happens with that? So, thoughts on that issue?
When I asked about this week, some of the feedback I got was that, you know, you could make a case for a delay because even people who backed the bill that passed last year say, we always intend to come back and put more money because they put $80 million aside to do this, and they said more was needed probably to do this.
Yeah.
Here's the issue. If Governor Evers had come and said, okay, we have now had the sites have been selected, we have bids out to retrofit some buildings or do new builds for some of these youth facilities, we know what it's going to cost. It's going to cost X dollars. The timeline to build these things is Y. We can't meet 2021, even if we tried. you have a better foundation to make the case of a two-year delay. Without that information, you're telling people, okay, we passed a bill in March or February of 2018. You want to put off closing these things to 2023. The downside of that for EVERS would be that delay happens. We saw that report from that court monitors a little while ago about they're still not in
compliance
with pepper spray, solitary confinement, things like that. Well, once you get past that 2021 close date, you start to own those problems more. So that's an issue for EVERS. And it goes back to what we've talked about before about this message kind of discipline that they're still getting their feet wet, new administration, but the more they can drive the conversation, they'll be reacting to the conversation, it would help them deliver their message and have a case.
And I just want to say that Tony EVERS is the state superintendent of public instruction. Wasn't central to the debate in the legislature between Republicans and the Goykis and the governor to set this time deadline of January 2021 to close these two juvenile prisons. He was not a part of that deal. So he came to it late.
Yeah, so I guess the point is that, again, it's symbolic of some of the issues that he has so far of getting his feet wet as governor, of like how to make that case of like having a clear message, a why, a foundation to make the point, and it would help people tell me to have that.
Yeah. You and I noted after Governor EVERS was elected on November 6th that he never named a transition or a task force to advise him on transportation issues. Well, he did that last week. 34 members. Can 34 people build any recommendation? That's a separate subject. He has five lawmakers on there. Two Republican senators, one Democratic senator, one Republican assembly member, one Democratic assembly member, all members of the Transportation Committee. Only Senator Mark Lane is a member of the Joint Finance Committee. But it's a unique crew because it includes trucking executives, local government officials, agribusiness leaders, one beer brewer, representatives of realtors, airports, ports, and advocates for bus riders, bicyclists, and train passengers. Can 34 people design a transportation funding plan by the governor's budget introduction February 28th?
Well, that's a question that people have. Is this going to be a long-term solution from this committee, or is it going to be this is your answer for the budget right now? If it's the answer for the budget right now, I don't see 34 people having a detailed plan that's going to cover 2 years. Now, maybe they can impress all of us and surprise us, but when's the last time you got 34 people to agree on anything in less than a month? So that's one issue. But if it's about a long-term solution, it could be a different story.
Well, do you think this 34-member panel, which Wisconsin is going to cover their meeting in La Crosse on Monday, do you think then this will be a sounding board for Transportation Secretary Thompson to say, when I do recommend my plan as part of the governor's budget, I listen to these 34, to use the governor's term, stakeholders?
We'll see how it plays out.
But Advisory panel?
Thompson's already indicated that he thinks there's a need for a revenue upper. What's it going to look like? Could it be a gas tax increase? Could it be a registration fee increase? Could it be taking general purpose revenue from the sale of cars or car parts and transfer it over to the transportation fund? They're all options like that out there. I just don't know which one they're going to pick.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Representative Nygren, after the WISPAL luncheon, said, here's an idea. The governor wants to cut income taxes by $340 million. Let's use the Walker rule. If you cut taxes one place and raise them in the other, it's a wash. Let's use the $340 million from the income tax cut and apply it to highway transportation funding. Now, he said that, and then about 2 hours later, he issued a press release saying, what, I was kidding?
You know, he
floats a trial balloon and then he shoots it down?
He was saying, what he tried to say after was, he meant that's where similar Republicans were before, because that was their plan last budget, right? Dale Kayenga, who's now in the state Senate, Republican from Brookfield. He put out this plan of moving toward a flat income tax, and with couple of the gas tax increase, that over time you would see less a net tax decrease, but you would have an income taxes going down while gas taxes went up. That was a plan before. It got rejected by Walker. Senate Republicans said, look, the governor's not on board. We're not going to touch that thing. So now would that fly? I don't know. I get the impression that Nygren was trying to say, look, I haven't talked to my caucus. This is where we were before. It would make sense. I just don't know if they can make that justification, because here you have, as somebody brought to me this week, Robin Voss has said he would be okay with an income tax reduction to cover gas tax increase, but he won't do an increase in the manufacturing ag credit, then offset a middle income tax cut.
Yep.
So
yep.
There's that issue out there.
Okay, we got only a few minutes remaining. Let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So Brian Stile, freshman.
First district congressman, Republican, replaced Speaker Ryan?
The oldest saying is the first reelect is usually the hardest.
Yep.
The DCCC, which is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, put out a list of 33 seats it's targeting. Now, they gained 40 in the election in November. They have 33 more they want to target on top of that. He's not on the list. And it was interesting to people I talked to because it's his first time to be go up for reelection.
Yep.
It could always change, but if you're not going to target him, it means he's not going to be, have resources directed at him, whoever runs against him. It's not a free pass, but it's not an intense reelect. The issue, though, is that that list of 33 seats focuses on suburban districts, mm-hmm. especially in Texas, around Austin, Dallas, Houston, places like that. Look at the first. It's not a suburban district. You have, urban center to the west, urban centers to the east, a lot of rural area in the middle.
Yep.
A sliver
parts
of
Waukesha County,
and then a small piece of like the southwestern Milwaukee suburbs. That's not the demographic you're shooting for if you're Democrat right now to try and flip seats. So plus he won by 12 and Trump won it by 10 just 2 years ago. So not the best place to go.
Yeah, mixed.
So traditional lawsuit. So we have now the trial is delayed until July. And some of the Democrats want out of it, which is interesting.
I couldn't understand that. Why?
Their attorney told the Journal Sentinel that they wanted to get out because there are plenty of people who are still in there fighting over the lawsuit. Plus, Republicans signed an $840,000 contract, taxpayer expense, to represent them in this whole thing. They can't raise the money. Well, it also happened they made that move right not long after Republicans asked for this detailed information about voter file information, like candidate profiles, like just all this internal stuff from the ADCC that you wouldn't want out in the public if you were the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee. So is that related? Maybe. But the bottom line is that trial's on hold until July. The Supreme Court has taken up two other cases right now with congressional lines drawn by Republicans, one drawn by Democrats. They will decide in those cases if we have a chance of our case really going to a conclusion. Because the court says, yes, you can have a partisan gerrymander that's so partisan, you can throw it out. Okay, our lawsuit's alive. If they say, no, you can't, our lawsuit's dead.
Okay, and here's a sound intro for your falling. Vroom, vroom, potato, potato, potato. Go.
So Harley.
Harley Davidson?
They've got, not a great period for them right now. They put earnings report out. That's a 1 cent per share, I think it was. They are hit by tariffs with President Trump put in place. And then the European Union hit them back. They're talking about shipping fewer bikes or producing fewer bikes in the next year, like an 8-year low. Sales are down. It's not a great time. And in asking people about this, the first question was, okay, was this all about Trump, right? Because he really left the company this year about the tariff stuff. The answer was no. There are a couple of issues like quality. They had a brake recall and a clutch recall this year. The bigger issue was demographics. They had a boom with baby boomers who aged in to like having the income to buy these bikes. And they bought into the image, right?
Yep.
We all had, people who white-collar by day, Harley rider by night.
Yep.
The problem is, baby boomers are aging out now of motorcycles, and there's no generation really behind them that's as big or as well-salaried to replace them. So that's going to be an issue for them going forward. They also, though, are producing now electric bikes, trying to find a new market. So it's going to be an interesting time for that company.
Iconic
Wisconsin manufacturer.
Yeah, that's a good following. Vroom, vroom. Okay, now let's take just a minute to talk about ahead what's next week. As I said, the transportation stakeholders meeting is Monday in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I will be there. Wednesday, I'll be interviewing Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson about some of the issues that we've been talking about. You have the Wisconsin Counties Association annual meeting Tuesday and Wednesday in mm-hmm. Madison. The governor's going to talk, cabinet secretaries, and partisan leaders come and handicap it. Mandela Barnes will be at the Milwaukee Press Club on Thursday interviewing Black History Month. And anything I've forgotten that we're going to look at?
Not yet.
Not yet, but we'll still be talking about it'll be
maybe.
Foxconn.
Maybe.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for February 1. And as of today, Foxconn is building a manufacturing facility. Stay tuned.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.